Weighing Machine was created to help you, the financial advisor or investor, reach your long-term financial goals. Each episode, your hosts, Rusty Vanneman and I, Robin Murray, cut through the market clamor to find the time-tested principles that help investors succeed.
The Weighing Machine is inspired by the classic investing saying attributed to Benjamin Graham. The stock market is a voting machine in the short term and a weighing machine over the long run. In other words, emotion and expectations drive short-term market movement, but fundamentals and valuations determine returns over time.
Welcome to The Weighing Machine.
Enjoy, and as always, let us know what you think.
On the podcast today, what's in store for the markets in 2022?
We'll discuss market surprises, thematic investing, and active strategies. That's with our guest, Kim Arthur, founding partner and CEO at Main Management. Welcome to The Weighing Machine. I'm Rusty Vanneman.
And I'm Robin Murray. Okay, let's start with a look at the markets. What are we watching for at the moment?
The markets, as always, are fascinating, and the start to this year is no exception. Probably the biggest story, in my opinion, is interest rates at their highest levels in months. And of course, the Federal Reserve is talking a lot tougher about inflation, and the anticipation is they will actually act tougher, not just talk tougher. As a result, growth stocks are getting hit, value stocks are actually up. And so that's kind of the big story right now.
Right. And another big story as we record this, the US is in the midst of a massive COVID surge led by the Omicron variant. But there is some hope that this surge may accelerate the end of the pandemic. At least that's what I've been reading about lately. So what do you think about that? And how do you think the market's going to continue to cope with COVID uncertainty?
You know, I stand corrected. That is actually the big story. But of course, I was just talking about the market returns. But I just listened to, there's a research firm called RENMAC, R-E-N-M-A-C. And, you know, I thought they put COVID, at least from an investing perspective, it's kind of like a weather event. It's still tragic to many people. It's very real, but it's also transitory. This is an example of something that is transitory. And it will go away. And I think we're seeing that in the market returns. It's the more cyclical fare is actually performing better. And so again, they're treating it as, I guess, sort of like a weather event.
Right. All right. Well, let's bring in our guest. Kim Arthur is a founding partner and CEO of Main Management in San Francisco and a three-peat guest of The Weighing Machine. Kim, welcome back.
Thank you, Robin. Really great to be back and appreciate you having Main Management.
Well, before we get started, Kim, of course, the standard first question is, what is your walk-up song? I know you've given it to us before. Are you sticking to it or do you have a new one?
Yeah, Rusty. So my walk-up song last year was Back in Black, but I'm taking one of the lines out of Back in Black, which is let loose from the noose. So out for Back in Black, and I'm bringing in the Cars song, Let's Go. And that's a shout out to your EVP of TAMP sales, Ed Kelly, who loves that statement.
I love it. But, you know, Let's Go, I love that album, the whole Candio album. In fact, when I was younger, I played baseball. I always listened to the entire Candio album for my pregame ritual. I mean, I'm just saying. So I did Let's Go. I know it. I love it.
Let's go.
All right. Well, Kim, as we have talked about before, I just want to remind our listeners, you began your career at Montgomery Securities in 1987. So that's about 35 years in the business. Tell us about your career and in the industry and how also the industry has changed since you got started.
Yeah, that's a great question. You're right. I've been in this business for 35 years in the financial services. Love the space. I think one thing that I would say that has not changed, Robin, is that if you constantly put the client first and you deliver exceptional service, I think you can win in this game. If you lose sight of that, then some bad things happen. And I think the other piece, too, that is very important that hasn't changed is trust. Clients have to earn, or you have to earn the client's trust. But once you do that, you can have a very fruitful relationship. So like the Navy SEAL 6 team, they have two criteria, performance and trust. Guess what they want more of? 100% trust and half the performance. They'll take that all day because you flip that equation around, that equals danger.
Good stuff. Well, as you mentioned, you're a founding partner and CEO at Main Management. Tell us what's unique about your firm.
Yeah, I think we have been laser focused on delivering what we call beta plus strategies to our clients. So using exclusively exchange traded funds. So when we started, there were 100 ETFs. There are now thousands and thousands of them. So having that laser focus, also the belief that We believe that investors should keep more of their returns. So we try to focus on what we can control, that's costs and turnover, and try to be extremely tax aware. And the last thing I would throw in that's very unique is of our $2.4 billion that we run, 15% of the money is partners' money. So we are keenly aligned with the interests of our clients.
I like it. Eating your own cooking. All right. So yeah. 35 years of experience. Another way to say that, you've been in the industry for 5 decades. I mean, it sounds a little more experienced even that way. All right. So we have a ton of Outlook questions. So let's just cut to the chase on the first one. And what is your stock market return estimate for this coming year?
Yeah. So we've got a 7% total return. That would be getting the S&P 500 up to roughly 5,050. What's interesting, Rusty, is after a 27% gain plus, which is what we saw in the S&P last year, the average return for the following year is 7%. But the pattern of that 7%, particularly if you look at DC right now, where we have a blue ripple, we have a Democratic House, Senate, and President. When you isolate for that factor, almost all of your returns come in the back half of the year. So the first half of the year can be a little bit tricky, and we can see all the headwinds out there from tapering, higher interest rates, inflation fears. So that's our target price, but we think there'll be some volatility.
All right. So speaking of these headwinds right now, the top concern, or it seems like the top concern for everybody outside of COVID, of course, is inflation. What is your view on inflation?
Yeah, we think that inflation will run probably in the 3-4% range for this year, which is above what the Fed is looking for. The Fed obviously has that 2+% target, which we think they'll probably expand that range to 2-3%. And that inflation is going to be driven by wages that will probably go up another almost 4%, and then owner equivalent rent, which is running at 3.5% right now. You do have this inflation, but we do think that there are signs on the horizon that it will crest out and start to roll over in the back half of the year.
All right, well, let's talk about bonds. What's your outlook on the bond market?
Yeah, I think last year, the Bloomberg aggregate was down 1.5%. I believe that was the first time since 2013 that there was a loss in the bond market. We think you can see a very similar pattern again, Robin, this year because of the fact that rates are going to be higher. So I think that bonds have more risk than they have reward. I will also throw out that in spite of the loss last year, there was almost $800 billion that flowed into fixed income, which is just staggering given that nobody made any money.
So if the bond market does generate unattractive returns, how can investors diversify equity risk? Should they be turning to alternatives?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Robin. I think alternatives, I believe, have a much better place as a complement along with fixed income. And the reason is that alternatives usually have somewhat of a capped upside. So if you're trying to substitute them with equities, equities could have uncapped upside, like we saw last year at almost up 30%. But the bond market, given that it does have, you know, much more predictable return streams, alternatives look very, very interesting in this type of an environment and should be a good complement and a mix and match to those fixed income that traditionally will probably have close to negative or flat returns.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of alternative strategies, one of your firm's top strategies is, of course, the Main Buyout Fund, which is the ticker BUYWX. Can you describe the strategy and how did it perform last year?
Yeah, Rusty, that is a covered call writing strategy where we do an asset allocation of global equities, and then we sell longer dated, anywhere from 6-12 month calls. It performed up 10% last year, and we have it kind of built for this year where we think it's a mid to high single digit return. And what's interesting, at the end of last year, we sold all those calls in the money. So what that does immediately is it gives you about 4-5% of downside protection from the in the money portion, plus we got about 6+% of premiums that will bleed out between now and the end of the year. So you really have a product that has 10% downside protection and 10% upside, which again, we think is really attractive given this higher volatility and kind of band-driven return stream for this coming year.
It's interesting because I've actually had a couple questions from advisors on related topics even over the last week. All right, let's stick with some other interesting strategies that your firm has. And a big topic is thematic investing. And I had a relatively difficult year last year. It depends how people invest in it, but it remains intriguing to many investors. How do you define it? And how do you invest in thematics?
Yeah. So as you said, thematics was a really, really difficult category last year. Virtually everybody had losses, had brackets around them. We define thematic as investing in the future. And typically what happens with that is the total addressable market is the portion that the market usually does not get dead right. It typically ends up being much larger than they expect. So what ends up happening is the return stream is not a straight or is not a 45 degree line up and to the right. It tends to be very stair-steppish. And what we do with our strategy is we have 10 underlying themes that include digital assets, it includes AI, it includes robotics, it includes pet care. So it has a lot of diversity across the themes. But the one common theme that they all have is you've got top line revenue growth that's almost 20%. So you've got doublings that are happening every 3 years. And when you get these periods when they get clobbered like they did last year with, rates starting to rise and anticipating, usually you have to kind of, when you've got that pit in your stomach, you got to kind of go in there and start to, buy away, chip away, and put a little bit in.
Hey, a follow-up question on thematics. What is your rule of thumb or suggestion for how people should invest in it? Like what percentage of a portfolio should be allocated, at least your equity portion of your portfolio?
So given that it's global in nature, our thematic is 60% US, 40% international. So I look at it as part of that, just like you said, the all country world index global equities. I think that it's probably got to be around a 10% allocation. It could be 5 to 10%. My father, who's 85, I've got zero allocated to it. I've got five kids. The median age is 14. I've got about 80% of their allocation is in a thematic or in our thematic and then in one of our other strategies.
Yep, that makes sense. All right, let's go to the strategy that your firm is probably known for most by many investors. And that, of course, is the active sector rotation strategy. Briefly describe it and how has it been performing as well?
So that strategy is a, like you said, it's a active sector rotation strategy. We overweight and underweight the 11 sectors in the S&P. Some of them can have zero weighting. Others can go as high as 2.5 to 3 times weighting. Last year, that strategy was up 29%. And it currently is positioned with a barbell approach. We have some growth and some value and cyclical. So right now, as you had mentioned, value and cyclical is doing better as the economy is starting to open up and people are starting to think that maybe we are transitioning to an endemic. So we do believe that there's further upside in the financial space and energy, both of which were overweight. I think that growth is still something that it's going to struggle for a little bit as this rate rise happens. But we have to remember that there's still, productivity, capital expenditures, they're all things that are happening on the growth side. And I just bring in one other thing that I'll mention. Deere introduced a tractor. So here's Deere with a tractor for farming. It's fully autonomous. It has 6 cameras. It has AI. It has semiconductor. It has software. So here's a space that you wouldn't think has technology embedded in it. And that tractor's got a lot of technology embedded.
Yeah.
Well, Kim, I also want to ask you about market surprises. That's something we talk about on the show quite a bit and how they can create volatility that unnerves investors. And while most people think about bad surprises when they're thinking about market surprises, good surprises can also create volatility. So I want to get your view on what we might be seeing in 2022. First, on potential positive surprises.
Yeah. So, Robin, I think one positive surprise is going to come out of the international sector. I will say a year ago, we thought that the international stocks would be able to outperform as we opened up the global economy. We obviously had Delta and Omicron that, stopped that from happening. But I will say, we were disappointed in our performance in our international last year. But I think that people are underweighted in international. I can't find anybody out there who is excited about international. Everybody everybody has just kind of given up on it. And it's interesting, 5 days does not make a year, but the All Country World X and the EEM are flat year to date, where the NASDAQ is down 4%. Everybody's long the NASDAQ, nobody's long the other one. So I think we will, in spite of the fact that the dollar could be stronger, you know, you're seeing rates being cut over in China, we're raising rates here. So I think the setup is for a positive surprise in that area.
All right, Wynn, what's your prediction for negative surprises?
So I think the first half of the year, what we are going to see here is the market is going to try to discount more rate hikes than actually will happen. So right now, Mr. Market has discounted 4 rate hikes. The 2-year yield is 87 basis points. That means that the market's expecting 4 rate hikes, 4 rate hikes. The Fed has said 3. So I think we're going to have that kind of roadblock here, that headwind for the first half of the year, but then it's going to become unclogged in the second half of the year, and we may only have 2 or 3 rate hikes, and that'll be an upside surprise.
How do you rank like geopolitical risk or the potential of that? Do you factor that much into your decision making?
We definitely are aware of it. I think the fact that everybody is still talking about the China-Taiwan, talking about Russia, Ukraine, and then talking about Iran, the fact that they're talking about those probably means that you won't see a negative surprise out of those 3 areas. Typically, it's the one thing that people aren't talking about that obviously ends up being the left tail negative, which I don't know what that'll be right now. But I think those 3 geopolitical ones that we've isolated, I don't think you'll get a negative surprise out of those.
Kind of shifting gears a little bit, how much is your firm traveling these days, given everything that's going on in the economy and COVID and whatnot? Are you guys getting out on the road?
Yeah, we traveled really aggressively, Rusty, up until the middle of December when kind of the holiday seasons kicked in.
Yeah.
We are out starting to travel again, though Omicron has obviously put a little bit of a damper. Like, for instance, around the Bay Area, we have lunches and dinners that were scheduled for next week. And I thought we were going to have to cancel all of them with clients coming in to see. But most of the clients that we've talked to, they've reconfirmed dinners and lunches that we have set up for next week. And then I'll be on the road the week after. So our salespeople are traveling around, but they're clearly, they're kind of reaching out, making sure people feel comfortable. And what I have noticed that's very different from 12 months ago, people seem to realize that they are going to have to live with this, as opposed to a year ago, they were very nervous and said, I'm shutting down and I'll wait for further data. So I think that is, again, that transition from pandemic to endemic that's starting to happen.
Indeed. All right. So Robin and I have introduced a new question to the podcast. So this one coming your way, it's a standard question, but you've never heard it before. But basically, I think you're going to like it too. But in our profession, we all have an obligation to perform at a high level. So how do you maintain your health, both physical and mental, to ensure that you are performing well?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've got 4 things that I focus on a daily basis. The first is making sure that I've got that balance with family and work. I think that's very important because that can obviously, a happy family lowers the stress level. So very important to have that. That's number one. The other 3 pieces are I make sure I get sleep. I got to have 8+ hours a day. And that's just how my body's built. And I better do that. And as long as I do that, things can go well. I make sure that I have good nutrition. I thank my grandmother, who she's no longer with us, but she had a health food store back when I was a wee kid in short pants in the 60s. So she taught me how to eat well. And then the last thing is daily exercise. So I think if I can kind of control those 4 pieces there, I think that I have a much clearer mind and I'm able to kind of juggle my 5 kids, my job, my wife, my life, and all the rest.
Wow, that's impressive. You're so disciplined. Robin, how much sleep do you get?
I also need a lot of sleep. 8.5 sounds great to me. I don't always get it, but that's sort of how much I need.
Well, last year I definitely started getting more sleep. So I'm now up like at 7. Gosh, I don't know how you guys pull it all off. So that's impressive. All right. So Kim, what other, in terms of materials and resources, what do you think investors and advisors should be reading or listening to or thinking about?
Yeah, I'm going to give your listeners an edgy Twitter feed. It's a guy who's been in Wall Street for probably 40 years, so 5 decades. His handle is Loggy Rhythm, L-O-G-G-Y GGYRHYTHM. And his tagline on there is fear is transitory, greed is forever. I believe firmly in that, but I say that, you know, greed is permanent, fear is temporary. But he's got some really interesting insights that I think on his Twitter feed that I think you would find and your readers would find very interesting. So that's one that I would throw out there. And then as far as resources for Maine Management, we have a learning center that catalogs all of our collateral, all of our videos. So we've got that out there. And I would also say, I'm very excited to say we have a brand new head of marketing. She will be joining us on the 24th of January. Her name is Shelby Murphy. Really excited. Everybody that's met her just loves her. And she comes, what's very interesting that I'm excited about, she doesn't have a finance background. She comes from having built a whiskey brand that was then sold to Constellation Brands. And then she is involved in a direct online retailing. So I am really excited about her perspective of marketing and bringing it into this whole financial services space.
Nice. All right. Well, Kim, it's been really great having you back on the show. Thanks for coming on. And how can listeners stay in touch and learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah. So I would definitely have everyone go to Maine Management Learning Center to pick up all the stuff that we have. And if you're not on our distribution list, we have a phenomenal collateral that we send out on a weekly basis. And then also periodicals that go out on a quarterly basis for all of our content. So I really appreciate the partnership with your firm and Rusty and Robin with both of you, and very excited to look forward to 2022.
In 2022, Kim, I promise we'll go paddleboarding. You've been so kind and generous to offer it twice. And because of crazy travel schedules and COVID and everything, I couldn't make it happen, but it's going to happen this year.
I love it. You have that invite that's still waiting. Everything's set up in your room with the paddle and the wetsuit and the surfboard. It's all there waiting for you.
Well, now you say that. What are you doing tomorrow?
No, I'm just kidding. Let's go do it.
Let's go. That's right.
Let's go.
Have fun with that, you guys. And that's going to do it for this week. Rusty, take us out with your final words.
Stay balanced and stay the course.
We'll be back soon. Thanks for listening to The Weighing Machine. And thank you for your time and trust in Orion Advisor Solutions. The Weighing Machine is hosted by Rusty Vanneman, Chief Investment Strategist at Orion Advisor Solutions, and me, Robin Murray, freelance writer and editor. If you have feedback or questions about our podcast today, please send us a note at rusty@orion.com. All opinions expressed by Rusty Vanneman and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and don't reflect the opinion of or endorsement by Orion, its affiliate subsidiaries, and its employees. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for legal, tax, and investment decisions. The opinions are based upon information the participants consider reliable.